Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
So what were you looking for? Well, what are you guys looking forward to seeing today?
So I've just been looking at what looks like a really good app for the air show. And there's a few things inside. I want to go and catch up with a couple of people. I think the next person we go and see is a guy I used to work with, US Marine Corps fighter pilot, who's left, works for a company now that do the air combat maneuvering debrief system. So the pods that we carry on aeroplanes.
Ooh, what's that noise?
I think it's a golf buggy.
Oh well.
The pods that we carry on aeroplanes, that then when you plug in for the debrief, show you exactly where you were. So on a mass red flag, for example, no one has to draw it anymore. You just plug everything into the computer system and it tells you where everyone was at a particular time and how it looked. So, catch up with a couple of guys like Frantic, go and see a few of the sort of big companies that I've been associated with over the last few years through aeroplanes that we've flown, and catch up with some of the flying. You know, Farnborough has definitely reduced post-Shoreham, you know, where there was that awful air accident.
Oh, yes, of course.
Just because of it's an airport and a built-up area, so the types of flying displays have been reduced. However, there does look like quite a good flying display program today.
Now, for you guys, is it more about seeing a few aircraft fly, catching up with people, relationships, rather than the actual technical side and the business side?
For me, a bit of both. The business side, not so much, but I'm certainly, to be able to wander around and have a look at some of the innovation. Tempest will be...
Tempest is here, right?
Yeah, so, I'm really looking forward to going and having a look at that. I think that's exciting stuff. So just looking at the technology of what, the future potentially holds. We've just come off the back, actually, of a Central Flying School international conference where we've been looking at technology and training, things like virtual reality, augmented reality, and there's so many really interesting innovations at the moment.
Yeah.
So that side of it, I think, is fascinating. The flying, I'm still a 10-year-old boy, really, so watching any of the flying display will be great. I think it'll be a really interesting day.
And I'm with Dunk on the innovation side of it as well, in that, as I am in a project manager in a program of carriers, next generation carriers, fifth generation aircraft, and helicopters, I'm always looking for that little bit of tech that might...
Interesting.
That not, it's not for me to buy, but I can suggest it to engineers, I can suggest it to people out there, that just might make a difference. It might make things cheaper.
What's that?
Oh, it's just a private jet.
Just a private jet.
I told you, he's like a kid in a sweet shop.
Exciting,
look how excited he is.
It's exciting.
Yeah.
So, I guess we'll go and have a look and keep putting in a little report every time we see something interesting.
Yeah.
JB, what are you looking forward to seeing?
Oh, well, the one thing which I'm really interested in is hybrid air vehicles and the Airlander 10. You might remember this. It's the thing which crashed in Cardigan. It's held in the... It's officially, I think it's the biggest flying object. An Airlander 10 is basically a blimp, and it's going to, in my opinion, revolutionise how we transport things across places which are inaccessible. So that for me is very exciting. And if I could afford it, I would have invested. But the minimum investment for Airlander is huge.
Is it?
Yeah. Well,
even,
I'd say huge.
Even more than you've got.
It's like you'd have to do Goddard's job for about 3.5 days to meet the minimum investment criteria. So, yeah.
Have you invested Goddard's?
Oh, several times.
I think
that's why it went
wrong.
Well,
it's all funded, you know. Not all funded, but there's a large proportion of funding. I think it's like, I might be getting this wrong, it's someone very famous, like some band member of Pink Floyd or something.
It might be. Nick Mason?
Yes, I'm almost certain it is.
Yeah.
Almost certain it is.
Does a lot of aviation, racing cars, all sorts of,
Do you know the story behind it?
No, I don't. I'm really interested in going to see it as well.
Well, I might just indulge. So it was a US military project, and the idea was they're going to put loads of cameras and sensors on this thing, float it up above a battlefield in uncontested airspace. It would stay there for days, if not months. And then during the sequestration period, where they cut all of the military projects, this is one of the ones which got cut. So a bunch of individuals in the UK bought it for something like 500,000, shipped it over to the UK, and they're trying to make some sort of commercial use out of it. In fact, I'll go one step further. I think it was originally a UK project that was bought by the Americans for that purpose, and then they bought it back. So they've sold it and they've bought it back, but it's a nice piece of kit.
Right. Having seen the Avengers movies, I was always thinking that maybe we could get one big enough that you could put a landing strip on one of these things and float it around the sky.
Funny you should mention that. So Airlander 10 is called Airlander 10 because it can theoretically move 10 tonnes of equipment. Airlander 50 is the ultimate goal, which would be 50 tonnes of equipment, and this thing is enormous. And it'll all be floated, I guess is the right word, by helium.
Helium?
Helium.
I thought for a minute there the Air Commodore had gone stark raving mad. But actually, that is quite a thought, isn't it? Put a runway in the sky.
A runway in the sky.
Well, nothing can go wrong with that.
No.
No, I've fallen off.
I forgot to put the brakes on.
If you go back to work and suggest a runway in the sky, I reckon you'll last about 5 minutes.
But do you reckon they had the same conversation 100 years ago when they were talking about a floating runway?
Well, didn't the US Air Force have some sort of hook-based system on underneath a B-52 for a fighter? And I'm sure the RAF did it in World War II as an experiment. They were attaching fighters to the bottom of bombers.
There's definitely been aeroplanes attached to the bottom of things before.
But
it just depends how far you can take it.
I don't know.
It's not beyond the unreasonable, I think.
Thinking outside the box here.
Yeah.
Let's go and suggest it to someone.
All right. Should we go and get involved?
Yeah, go on, let's go.
Excellent. Through the miracle which is time, we are here with our first victim. I'm just going to call you Frantic, but I assume that you've got a more formal name.
Yeah, Kevin O'Rourke, working with Cubic Global Defense right now, formerly with the Royal Air Force and the Lightning Force headquarters before I retired after 23 years in the Marine Corps.
So I'd probably best hand over to Goddard just for a little bit more of a formal explanation of why we're here and who you are.
Yeah, so Frantic and I worked together in the last job that I was doing before I went up to Lossiemouth, which was F-35. Now, Frantic came extremely well regarded from the US Marine Corps. Top Gun graduate, F-18 pilot, boss of an F-18 squadron.
Yes.
For whatever reason, and we were just talking about flying aeroplanes, he's walked out the door and works for a company, Cubic, who've been... I guess they're the people that draw all of the threads together when we go and do these massive red flags and so on. You know, people are carrying pods, and the big debriefing systems that you see us debriefing on, that's what the company does. So we only wanted to take 5 minutes with you. So why don't we go back a little bit? We were talking about Top Gun just on the pod the other day. We were actually going to sit down, watch the movie, and critique it all the way through, weren't we?
The volleyball scene. Oh,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Now, so tell
me, which one were you?
Yeah. So when you did Top Gun, did you play beach volleyball?
Absolutely every day.
Oiled yourself up.
That's the way it works.
So how was the course when you went through? Because I was explaining it the other day as a sort of, you guys came out as ninjas in air combat.
We did. You know, it was the course I went through was an all-Marine course. It was fantastic. I'll never forget going through there. And you come out of that course the most proficient you've ever been in the tactics that are there, and it's absolutely amazing. And then after that, we moved on to the Marine Corps Air Warfare course.
The WTI course.
The WTI course, which then built upon those things and brought in a bunch of ground elements as well for the Marine Corps. Yeah.
And so was the Top Gun class, was it just sort of air combat, or did you get into strike type stuff as
well? We did air combat and strike, and it was six people. That was it. Six people per year went through that, or 12.
Was it a year-long course?
No, it was 6 weeks.
Six weeks at the time. Wow, so it's pretty short, pretty intense.
So,
you go to Top Gun as a...
I'm sure it's longer now. I think it's much longer now.
Right.
Yeah. So you go to Top Gun as an experienced pilot already. You've got to get selected. How surprised are you with the amount that you can improve from a base level, which is already pretty good, to where you end up?
Well, they were extremely demanding, and so you can improve a lot. Let's just say that I thought that I was good going in, and I realized that I wasn't. And after going through the course, you realize how hard you had to train and exactly what you needed to know. Yeah, I remember doing flights, and they're like, "Yeah, we went out and did a flight one time. We had probably 15 or 20 airplanes, and this flight was a demonstration by the Top Gun IP."
Instructor pilot
saying, "I'm going to demo how this complex thing is done." We came back and he goes, "You know, boys, we didn't perform very well today. We're going to go do it again tomorrow." And he led the next one tomorrow to show us exactly how it needs to be done. And at that point, they go, "Okay, Frantic, you got the next flight the next day, different complex scenarios. Let's see how you do." So that's how the training goes there. It's fantastic. Yeah.
Did you find it humbling?
Oh yes. Yeah.
Was there any particular moment where you thought, "Oh my God, maybe I'm not quite as good as I thought," or was there any actual point where you thought, "Maybe I'm just in over my head"?
You know, as they say in aviation, Goddard's, you're only as good as your last flight. You can be the king of the ace of the base one day. The next day, if you mess something up, you're standing in front of the table telling the boss why you did something wrong. So it's always very humbling. I mean, in general. When it comes to that type of level of aviation, it's like playing for a pro rugby team.
And I guess what it does as well is, at the end of it, notwithstanding the sort of peaks and troughs that you go through in that 6 week period, the confidence that it must instill in you when you come out, you must feel, "Now I am King Kong at this." I feel really confident in going and leading the boys, and I guess instructing the guys that are then on the squadron with your knowledge, taking them forward as well.
You've got it exactly right. The instructional capabilities you get there set your foundation for the future, and then eventually guide your squadrons, just like the QI would guide a squadron in the UK.
So given what you did then...
And qualified weapons instructor.
Yeah, yes, exactly. So given what you did then... And who you work for now in terms of world-class debriefing? Did you have a system like that when you went through the when you went through the course? And could you have done with the sort of tech that you're showing us today?
We had the actual same system that I have. Obviously, it's been upgraded a little bit, but it is the P5 combat training system that we had up there at Nellis. In fact, all over the world.
So you're carrying a pod.
Carrying a pod.
Essentially records all the information.
At 10 times per second, truth data going back down. That pod is viewed live. And then safety and training objectives in this massive war you're fighting, or a very small fight, are then looked at to make sure you achieve the efficiencies you need. Because remember, you go up and you fly 15 airplanes, 20 airplanes in a flight, and then you come back like the instructor did and goes, "We're going to do it again." That was our failure. But had this scenario not been set up correctly by the Red Air, we could have also failed there. So our live monitor is absolutely fantastic. It's used. The live monitor portion is not used by the UK, but our debriefing system is currently used by the UK. And it's fantastic.
Yeah, and so I've used that in Typhoon for years now, actually, in terms of how we do it. And I think I may have mentioned on a pod previously, one of the hardest things I ever did was going through an instructor pilot course on the F-16, where you had to be able to draw almost exactly on a board what happened in real life. And what this system does is takes that away, so you don't have to worry about that. You can just get on and debrief and work out exactly what happened. And to me, and Dunk will absolutely, from a central flying school perspective, support it, but the debrief in when you're training is the most important part of what we do, because if you don't go and debrief it, you don't know what went wrong, and you don't know how you're going to fix it when it went wrong, you know. So I guess going back to Top Gun, how long, you know, given the size of the air war there, how long were the sort of debriefs that you were in?
3 to 4 hours.
Really?
Yes.
I guess the other thing to take away, the things that this debriefing tool gives, is that it is a hugely dynamic environment that you're flying and fighting in. There's a lot going on. And you may come back with a picture in your mind about how that fight went, but it might actually not be exactly what happened. And what this does is, as we were saying, is that sort of that total truth that the pod tells means that you can take it away those lessons, and perhaps even though you think you know what's happened, you know, leading the fight sometimes will take away lessons that you thought maybe that.
It's exactly like video study in sport. You think you've had a good game, or you think you've done something, and then you watch the tape and think, "Oh my god, do I actually look like that?
Yeah,
am I really that bad at the thing which I've been doing for 10 years?"
So yeah. I guess just we only wanted to keep you for a few minutes, but so what's the future of this? What's the future of debriefing? The future of real time tracking? You know, the sort of stuff that you're doing at Lund.
Well, we see the future as an evolution and continued use of the P5 and an analysis. And if I will go to two things for you. One involves artificial intelligence to define the art form that you're trying to draw on the board.
And so it tells you automatically where you've gone wrong
and
in
maybe
your fight.
Correct. And maybe suggest ways that, we have identified that these are ways, machine learning type of things, where you can say, this is the way the other pilots do it and achieve greater learning objectives and success. You're doing this and that's incorrect, so maybe you should try these moves. Versus the instructor holding two sticks out in front of them and saying, if you were to just kind of point your nose this way with a model, and that other model points that way. The second thing is, and we've already demonstrated this, we've already flown it, is complete live virtual constructive entities being injected into the cockpit.
Right, so just unpack that quickly. Live virtual constructive. What does that mean?
This means taking a computer-generated entity and pushing it through a data link up to the pod, and then putting that onto the avionics in the cockpit, so the pilot does not know whether that entity is real or it is fake.
Wow.
And in doing so, like I said, we're leaders in this. All those aircraft that I just talked about in my scenario with the Top Gun, half of those could have been fake airplanes, and it wouldn't have mattered to us because we never saw them.
Yeah.
But there's technologies now that are amazing. And
so those long-range shots that you do where you're killing people out at, long range...
That's correct.
They could be fake, but you're seeing a missile fly out, you're...
Seeing a missile, you're receiving the spike indications, you're seeing possible jamming and chaff flare and all of that stuff.
Wow.
Yeah.
Just to go back to the AI on your debriefing system, does it know the performance of the aircraft such that it would be able to tell you if you'd have rolled 90 left here and pulled rather than continue to pull over the top, you would have gained this many angles?
That's
type of thing.
Yeah, that's the idea behind it. Remember, you asked about the future and where we're going.
Yeah.
These technologies are starting to become available that are quite amazing.
Yeah.
Are you okay for time?
Oh, wow. I've got plenty of time.
Excellent. Can I ask a very simple question, right? I just want to dial it right back. So I think most people listening will be very familiar with the Air Force. They'll be relatively familiar with naval aviation. I think in the UK as well, those two things are kind of merging with the F-35 project. You flew for the Marines. So what makes Marine flying different and what makes it special?
Yeah, good question. So the Marine flying, obviously, we always used to joke, it's the Navy's Army's Air Force, right?
Yeah.
Because you have the Navy, and then you have the Navy, the Marine Corps, and then they have their own Air Force, really, to go do the thing. So we're centered around supporting our Marines on the ground, and we're also trained to all the high-end missions as well. And that really is the difference, is that we can get tasked, we can task our own airplanes to do our own support missions, and we don't have to wait for somebody else to do it. Unlike the Army, we don't need to task the Air Force. A colonel gives another colonel a call and goes, I want airplanes here, or a general does, and he gets what he wants immediately, and that's how we're organized. Now, obviously, we help the larger picture, but that's our focus. And then the other thing that makes it unique is, and maybe with you two daughters, I don't know, but every Marine serves on the ground in a ground unit that is an aviator at some point in his career to provide forward air controller or JTAC, joint air terminal controller services, which then brings the link from the air and the ground together, because you get pretty personal when rounds are going down range and you know your buddy who has just been transferred to a forward air controller position that used to be in your squadron is down there.
Yeah,
and everybody knows everybody, just like the Air Force.
You know, I saw this in the United States Air Force, in that the guys after a tour, you know, so they're a junior pilot on a F-16 squadron. At the end of that tour, it was sort of one of three ways. You know, they might go off and do another F-16 tour if they're then going to become a weapons instructor. They might go off and become an instructor pilot. Mm-hmm. But an awful lot of them went off to do air liaison officer tours. And in around the time that I was with the USAF, in around Iraq, so one of the guys I was on the squadron with was one of the first joint tactical air controllers, a forward air controller, into Baghdad with when they initially went in 2003. And the guys in the air, exactly as Frantic has just said, it makes a hell of a difference when you've got that almost emotional contact connection with the guys on the ground. You know, I think we always have that as part of a service ethos. Mm. I just think that link is probably a little stronger when
we have a smaller organization.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's but yes, you're right. No, they both do it. So maybe that's not so unique, but feel it is.
No, I think the other thing, and Frantic and I used to talk about this in the office quite a lot, but you guys do Marine sort of grunt training first, don't you? You know, so you're kind of a rifleman first before you get anywhere near an aeroplane.
That's correct,
yeah.
So is that the reason, this might sound ridiculous, is that the reason that you wear a camouflage helmet whilst flying?
I don't know where that started from. Sometimes the helmet covers are gray, but we always seem to put a helmet cover on our airplane because the Marines have an aversion to anything that might reflect and give their position away should they eject.
So I think,
which I think is funny because that's when you really want them to see you.
So JB, I think you've just nailed it. So that's exactly the reason, because you're wandering around as a trooper doing your basic training, looking at whatever it is, shape, shine, shadow, silhouette, all those S's in terms of camouflage.
Yeah.
And now you're thinking about that in an aeroplane.
Correct, yeah. Which is it's quite funny because, why would I ever wear white? I would never wear something white with my tactical aircraft. I'm going to put a camouflage helmet cover on. It's pretty funny.
There you go then. Well, thank you very much. I thoroughly enjoyed that.
Yeah. Frantic, good to see you, man.
Good to see you as well.
Yeah, good luck. I look forward to maybe getting into a cockpit again, probably the back seat of something in the future.
You'll be chief of the air stuff.
Yeah, whatever.
I'll take it.
In fact, Duncan, take me flying and see how all of this sort of debriefing.
Me too.
Yeah, and you.
Yeah.
The debriefing system's working in the future.
Yeah,
but brilliant to see you. Thank you.
All right.
Cheers, Frantic.
Yeah, cheers. Thank you very much.
I've got to say, there are worse ways to spend an afternoon than in
sat on a balcony watching a Red Bull air racing machine, so an extra, a pit special for those who know what they look like. It's currently probably, what do you think, Roger, about 50 feet, less than that? No, maybe 30 feet.
Yeah, 50 foot.
Flying between inflatable pylons and showing a huge amount of skill. But so we're sat here right now watching this with Roger Bennett of Thales, who... just like our last interview with Frantic, actually, is a ex-military pilot. So, Roger, what did you do when you were in the Royal Air Force?
Flew the Buccaneer through the tornado and was very privileged to go and fly with the US Navy on the A6 Intruder in America for 3 years.
A6 is one of my favourite aircraft.
You know,
not the prettiest by a long...
That's why it's so beautiful.
JP, I just said exactly that to Roger when... because I've known Roger for ages, and embarrassingly, I didn't know that he'd done that as well. And I remember reading, have you ever read this? There's a series of books, fiction books, called Flight of the Intruder. Who wrote them?
It was written by a guy whose brother actually was an A6.
Grafton.
It's an A6. He was an A6 bomber navigator. But it was his brother that wrote the book. And obviously Flight of the Intruder, I got to know because my squadron commander when I arrived out there was a guy called Bruce Wood, who in the book is Boxman, because that was his call sign,
and,
Boxman.
And I tell you what, so as a young kid interested in aeroplanes reading Flight of the Intruder, I just, same as you, that's weird, isn't it, JP? Yeah. I didn't know this, that you liked the A6. I loved the A6, you know, in terms of being a bomb truck.
So when did you do it,
and what did you do?
87, beginning of 87 to the end of 89.
So you were flying A6s during the Top Gun...
I arrived just after it had been released in this country, yeah, so...
So did that make you even more proud of the US Navy?
No, you can't possibly say that for public consumption. No,
is it really a US Navy? What's the word I'm looking for? A US Navy tailhook. Does that really exist?
It is big time when I was there.
No, I know it still does.
I thought it was banned.
It's been scaled down since incidents that happened around my time.
Yeah, I think what happened at the time was probably the right thing, because I think it was getting out of control from what I hear. But... they have turned it since into a reasonably, a serious conference about...
Oh, is it? How disappointing.
Naval aviators all arrived in Las Vegas, didn't even go into Nellis to arrive. They all arrived at McCarran Airport, because it was closer to the action. And they take over the Hilton, third floor of the Hilton, if I recall, and it was under the auspices of being a conference, which it was, but conferences aren't 24 hours, and off-duty time was... It was a great party of naval aviators.
And when you tie that present in with the fame and fortune of US Navy aviators at the time because of Top Gun, you've got a heady mix that was always, I think, going to be an issue.
The US Navy got, I won't say a reputation, but it was well documented that Miramar parties, Oceania parties, North Island parties, built round the Top Gun.
You must have been a powerful man back then, because
I've never been a powerful
Navy aviator, but a US naval aviator in America with a British accent.
Oh, I wasn't the only Brit out there, of course. There were other Brits, but there were a lot of Australian guys out there as well, and Canadians on exchange. And of course, it's a strange accent. They say I've got the accent. They've got the accent. They just abuse our language, really.
I mean, it's happened to me, so I know you get selected for exchange, but where did you go after that? What did you do?
So
when you got selected for A6...
Yeah, I went to Whidbey Island.
Whidbey Island, and is that... So did you go out there to do the conversion? What happened?
I stayed, they call it the RAG, the Replenishment Aircrew Group, I think they call it the RAG in the Navy. I stayed on the RAG, on the OCU, at Whidbey Island, Washington, so in a little village called Oak Harbour.
And
the island.
How did you find the A6? Because you'd come off great tornadoes at the time, or was it bucks?
No, bucks and tornadoes, and then the A6.
All right, wow. So how did you find it to fly?
It's a steam aeroplane. It's very pulleys and hydraulics focused. It's a seriously old, it was even an old aeroplane then, although technologically and avionic wise, it was quite well advanced, even compared to Tornado. As it was at the time, but it went out of service as a bomber after the Gulf War I.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare.
PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Because obviously A6 were involved in Gulf War One shortly after that. But the A6 Prowler, which is the EW aeroplane, I think has only now just recently been replaced by the F-18 Growler.
I flew with the Prowler quite a lot of the time. So where you flew in the two-seat version of the ground attack aeroplane.
They were the four-seat.
They converted it to the four-seat where they had a pilot and three ECMOs, combat management officers.
And a lot of the guys who were lieutenant in my time and ended up getting promoted to lieutenant commander and then subsequently to commander and onwards, because there were no A6s left, they ended up commanding the AQ squadrons, which is the EW version at Whidbey Island.
So you came from Tornado, two seats. Mm-hmm. Was it quite cool to be able to sit next to the guy rather than behind the guy?
That's a good question. I like it.
Yeah, well, it is particularly. Yeah, it actually is, because actually you can point with your finger. I suppose. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting, JB, because I went through flying training on the Jet Provost.
JP5.
Junk, you went through on the
Tucano,
didn't you?
Yeah.
So I did side by side seating, and I did always find that better, because the instructor could point things out or could look at you in that way to let you know that you were doing things wrong without actually having to say anything. I don't know whether from Dunk's point of view a side by side or
if you're not on the needles, like,
yeah, point at the needles, you know, when you're 50 foot high or whatever.
Yeah.
But how did you find the US training compared to UK training?
Actually,
because you would have been an experienced guy going out there.
Yeah, a lot of people have asked me that. I have to say the US Navy are closer to the way we go about business in the RAF than perhaps the USAF, which is very, you know better than me, but the USAF, how focused they are.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, NATOPS, which is, if you like, their ODM and their
Rules and regulations.
The GASOs. Yeah. NATOPS was, you had to know NATOPS. But they were flexible, because if you're not flexible going in on and off a carrier, you've got big problems. Procedurally at night, coming back on the carrier is absolutely spot on.
So I was going to get to that. You know, with F-35 now, obviously being involved in the F-35 program, the technology involved has made it so much easier to land on a carrier than, mine and Dunk's day on the Harrier, which we'll joke about snake fighting in the cockpit. You know, essentially in an F-35, it is easy. How was it for you guys as crews, managing your fuel, managing all of that sort of stuff, to arrive at the right place in the right time? I heard this fantastic...
It was mandrolic, very mandrolic, if you understand that term. It was all done by seat of the pants, flying the needles, because obviously you've got ACLS needles, which is automatic carrier landing system.
Right.
It's a carrier based ILS. It had ILS as a carrier as well, but this was an automatic system that would allow you to come on the carrier hands off. Actually, we never did phase Cat 1 landings. We weren't allowed to, except in extremis. But you could do a Cat 1A, which means you could come down on an automatic, and then once you're on the ball, actually then on the ball means in the last three.
I was going to say, so explain the ball. So the Fresnel lens.
Fresnel lens
system.
And then the ball.
I understand a British invention.
A British invention, angled decks.
And so how did it work?
Well, basically, it's a series of lenses that relayed back to the crew on the aeroplanes. You get a little meatball, a little green ball, and the horizontal line. inclined, and if you're coming down on a 3.5-degree glide pass, which is steeper than you normally would in on a base, if you keep the ball in the middle and you're on speed, you will technically always hit the three wire on the carrier.
And why the three wire? Why not the two wire?
The three wire is what you're targeting. If you're a little bit shallow, you'll hit the two. If you're very, very shallow, you'll probably get waved off by the landing safety officer. Otherwise, you're in danger of taking the one wire, which is right at the front end of the boat.
So why do they even have a wire there?
It's in extremis, really, Goddess, that is. Absolutely. I mean, my first trap was on the USS Enterprise, and I'm not sure if it's still there, but they used to take us to the back end, and a vigilante, I think it was, during the war out in the Far East, I'm not sure if it's a tail or the hook, certainly hit the round down of the Enterprise, and the imprint on the round down is still there, or was still there.
Wow, my goodness.
So you do not want to be low and slow, otherwise you will get a wave off. So a three wire is the best one to take. Four probably next, and if you miss the four, then you're going round again, which you don't want to do at night.
There's something geeky, but that's a great stat to have, isn't it, Roger? My first approach onto the carrier was to the USS Enterprise.
Yeah, it was.
And there,
so the Enterprise,
Captain Kirk was there. He was watching me.
Enterprise, of course, was the main ship that was covered in the film, in the Top Gun film.
Yeah.
There were other ships used, but the Ghost Rider bits of the side, that's Enterprise, the biggie.
Enterprise is a one-off ship, isn't it? It's not a Nimitz, it's a one-off.
You're absolutely right, actually. It's the first
new... How did you even know that,
Jamie? That's geeky. That is geeky. You've done too much reading.
Stop it.
It was. It was CV-65.
That's really good, isn't it?
CV-64 was, I think, the Kitty Hawk. CV-66 was the US America, or JFK. And the first Nimitz was Nimitz, and that was CV-67. But it was the first nuke at the time, and I think it's probably still the case if it's still operational. It's the longest ship.
Yeah.
Now, in terms of...
Did you ever look at the Enterprise for want of a better word...
I can hear a Harrier.
Heat.
Sorry, just saying.
Oh,
sorry.
My God.
There it is.
Oh, wow, look at that.
Oh, lovely.
And it's Spanish. Is that right?
We may have to curtail the interview, I think. As we watch
a Harrier for some time.
Sorry,
it's an air show favourite, isn't it?
And I said to AC1 Group,
heaven forbid if the F-35B becomes the new air show favourite. If you haven't got enough of them.
It's lovely to see a Harrier back in the UK.
Well, I'll tell you what, so for anyone listening, they probably don't want Doug Major to start blubbing. So
there you go,
Roger. Thanks very much for chatting to us.
It's brilliant. And enjoyed it.
We'll be back in a minute.
Excellent.
So we're watching the Harrier display.
That's an amazing airplane.
See, I don't think a Harrier should actually bother doing the fast flying around stuff.
Well, he's got to get rid of his fuel so he can hover. That's the only reason.
Just partially refuel it so you can go straight into some stunts.
Exactly, straight into...
Oh, I love it. I've never actually seen an aircraft fly like this. Similarly, the fact that, you know, that it's not an everyday occurrence.
Of course, this is your first day show, I forget.
Yeah, exactly.
I remember Spike telling me about it. You have to put the water in to cool your bis for. Is that for the hover?
Yeah, okay.
So is that, you have 60 seconds with the hover, is that right? So,
not necessarily.
You have about that much water, don't you?
90 seconds. Yeah. So you've got 90 seconds of water.
Yeah, I can't remember, it's been a long time.
But that gives higher engine limits. Run the engine at higher temperatures, which means on a day like today where it's hot, then the hover performance of the engine is decreased. You can add that water, it gives you extra performance to allow you to hover in those different temperatures.
Of course, almost at the home of the Harrier, aren't we? Just up the road. Just up the road.
Dunsfold.
Dear old John Farley, who died
there.
Duncan Simpson, of course. Test pilot as well.
So it was.
And we can't.
Bill Bedford.
And we have to also respect Sir Peter Squire, of course, who. Gulf War. Falklands War. OC-1 Squadron and former Chief of the Air Staff. Harrier man through
Harrier
and through.
Man as well,
I tell you what, so Dunk, you know, you've got clearly a tear in the eye. I vaguely remember flying it.
Didn't you crash one of these Godders?
I did crash one, but we can talk about that later.
To be fair, it was an easy aeroplane to crash.
Yeah, that's true.
A lot of people did it.
Any aeroplane is an easy aeroplane to crash.
But I'll tell you, the one thing is... people listening, so there's been various aeroplanes flying throughout the day, but the Harrier started flying now and people have just flooded onto the balcony that we're on to come and watch it. So clearly there is something about
so long.
It's been eight years since since the Harrier retired from RAF.
2010.
Yeah, and my sad claim to fame is I was just launched. I was the authorising officer on the desk when the boys were walking out. It was a beautiful day when Gary Waterfall, the force commander, rang and said, "Duncan, have the boys got airborne?" I said, "No, they're just walking to the jets now, sir." He said, "Right, stop them." What a sad day that was.
Yeah. That was it. I mean, was that how brutal it was? It's like you're not going to do last night.
Yeah. No, but there's a risk element there. If you're getting rid of the force, and there is no reason to be flying, why would you send people flying?
A lot of hardened Harrier guys were very saddened by that.
Squid
was being was it Squid OC-1 at the time, or
is that hovering though? It's flying very slow.
It's coming in a slow flight. So you see, it's got the big barn door flaps down at the back, which gives it an awful lot of wing lift. But he's starting to point the nozzles down now, so he's in what's called a deceleration.
You can see the jet wash underneath that we're pointing down. He'll have those nozzles around about 50, 55 degrees now.
So in terms of horizontal flight, how capable is the Harrier versus the F-35?
F-35's got a massive power margin. So the Harrier right now, this guy will be probably on the limit as to whether he can hover. It's hot here today, it's close to 30 degrees. So he'll be quite low on fuel. I don't know, Dunk, maybe 1,500, 2,000 pounds of gas. F-35 will be up there at 6,000 pounds of gas. Hovered at Fairford and then flew back to Mara. You know, because the technology is so different. And you can
see... it's going to get noisy. He's just coming into the hover now.
I think he's only just into the hover. He's hovering into wind now.
And it was introduced to Farmer many years ago as the Kestrel, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. Basically, it was originally a private project. Yeah. Imagine the risk.
Right, so hopefully he's hovering, pointing to the crowd at the moment. Hopefully he's going to... or he or she is going to turn on their pedals, turn away, and then climb away steeply.
This is terrible audio.
Notice with the wheels up as well.
I think as well that gave him a different engine rating.
Yes.
So how hard is it for a Harrier to go from hovering back into level flight, bearing in mind when you put the nozzles back, I assume you lose your lift?
Yeah, you have to do it very gradually.
Yeah.
So that you translate, we call it translation, translate from jet-borne flight into wing-borne flight. And then the flaps are very clever. They come up incrementally from 62 degrees all the way up. So as you convert to wing-borne flight.
Because I presume if you slam the nozzles back, you're going to fall into the ground.
Yeah, you would fall right out of the sky.
Right, so he's got the water in there.
Wow. That's amazing. It's
can see the dark smoke from when the water injection is going into the engine.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, exactly.
Seriously well powered. I remember being on a tanker with the Harrier. I was in a tornado, and we were, you know, in and out of min burner on one engine just to stay, you know, at altitude with the tanker hose. These things, just so much power to get in the tanker. It's fantastic, actually.
I was smiling then because the way you were shouting into it, do you remember that Monty Python sketch? The bells are getting louder.
Yeah.
So what is the, is there a Turkish or a Tunisian aircraft right in front of us? So no, you can only see its tail. Turkish?
Oh, I don't know. That's a the three engine one. The three see, engine
business. So see the private jets there.
Other
one,
side of the
two,
runway.
Three. If you look, see right in the middle of the private jets is a camouflage tail.
Oh yeah.
And it was Turkish or Tunisian or some such thing.
Don't know.
Exciting stuff, isn't it?
Look, he's still. Look how slow he is coming around finals there. So he's got his wheels down.
So we used to have fights with Sea Harriers, actually. When they start biffing.
Yeah.
No way.
Vectoring
in
forward flight.
Yes.
Sorry.
Yeah. I always wondered about this, if that was like a real thing, or if it was just... Like, they are actually difficult to...
I fell out of the sky every time I touched the lever at doing combat. I just wasn't good enough to use it.
We
just used to park the noise leaders and levers and leg it. Yeah. You start getting into that sort of close fight, and no way we were going to survive with them.
So he's just doing what's called a stall flap slow landing now, but you can see he's very slow. He'd be at about 80 knots, you know, which
Fantastic.
Is...
Well, if you're landing on a carrier, it's ideal. Well, you wouldn't actually do that, would you? You'd just go vertical.
Always vertically on the carrier.
I tell you what, Dunk, you're right. That is strange seeing a Harrier after all these years. You know, I mean, it was January 2000 I last flew a Harrier as a captain.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
So over 18 years ago.
Mine was December 2010. One of the last sorties. So
it's not about the last sortie, Dunk, that is.
We did, yeah, we did a big
you
four
in that
squadron.
Last?
I wasn't in the very last one, but we went and did a four squadron push where we visited all the bases that we, throughout Air Force history, that we could reach with the fuel that we had, that had operated with four squadron, mm-hmm. all around the south of England, and then came back and hovered and bowed.
Tell you what, you are RAF boys, you're a very sentimental bunch.
We are.
I suppose we
are.
Yeah.
We're very sentimental. Yeah. I just binned it.
But you think the fact
is...
No,
you think that, but
you
these... But you were, you know, you lived through all sorts of moments in these aeroplanes, you know? So you come close to death, mid-air, you know, coming close to people, going to war in these aeroplanes.
The squadron's a very tight-knit unit.
And that's how we established the family,
the people,
RAF
though,
family.
It's the aeroplanes as well, and everyone you'll find, you know, is fiercely... both protective and proud of the aeroplanes that they fly.
So, could you bin a rugby team quickly?
Bin Broughton Park.
Right. It was at this
10
point.
Years,
this point on the podcast, ladies and gents, we found that JB had no heart.
I think I'm a sociopath.
But it is you get the family, and we retire Tornado next year.
Yeah.
And there's,
there's
at least 5,000 aircrew flown Tornado front and back seat, and you think that is a family. That's not a family. Well, that's
a
whole
extended family.
Extended
country.
Yeah. It is.
Well, I mean, you two are still serving. Are you in touch with
me? I'm not serving.
So, sorry, these two here. As in God is, sorry for the listeners, but God is and Dunk still serving. Are you still in touch with many guys from
the squadron? Yeah. I mean, I'm still a reservist, so although not in a flying game, but I keep in touch. I go to the reunions as and when that you need to, and my current job keeps me involved with people as well. Nice aeroplane.
That is a nice aeroplane.
And what was it, an
A350? Look how light it is.
Whoa.
Right, so
it's got nothing in it though, has it?
Yeah, it's like a Harrier.
Yeah. What are we watching there? It's the Airbus.
That's timing steeper than a Harrier.
We're basically watching an empty. Empty
Airbus.
What is that?
350.
An 350.
Which I get, is that the 787?
Yeah, equivalent. Yeah. Airbus's competitors are Boeing Dreamliner.
So it's amazing how nimble they are when they're basically empty.
Yes. We were talking earlier saying that actually some of the most impressive displays at air shows
I'll buy the big aircraft, and now we're looking at this A350,
which to me looks like it's going to crash.
It looks exactly like that.
Let's hope it's
Gently would not approach crossed. Heathrow like that, would
right,
it?
So I get worried about now. It's pointing at us about now.
Yes, I think it'll be all right. It'll end up on the BA systems.
A good mate of mine used to be chief test pilot for Airbus. He was a Buccaneer Tornado man. And he used to display the A380 here, Pete Chandler.
Oh, Pete Chandler. He was the one who ejected from the Hawk, wasn't he?
I don't know, did he?
Yeah,
I think it was ejecting.
I think, I'm sure it was Pete Chandler ejected from a Hawk, and as it was rolling because of wake turbulence.
Okay.
And he ended up, the seat didn't deploy, but he hit the ground at such a grazing angle, it slid, and he just broke his arm.
Oh, dear. Well, I don't remember.
May
that.
Not have been Pete Chandler.
But he used to display the A380 here.
Yes.
And to see that huge aeroplane, four-engined aeroplane, get airborne and roll probably 30, 40 degrees of bank almost as he rotated, is quite a scary sight.
I have no idea how that thing's even staying in the air.
It does look like it's defying the laws of gravity, doesn't it?
What's that sound that our listeners can hear?
I think it's a golf buggy in reverse.
And we're not at Carnoustie.
That looks hot. I'll tell you what, Carnoustie is browner than the ground here.
I'm just going to go back to the Harrier display just whilst the A350 is displaying, because I've got a wonderful dit of when a guy that was on the Harrier force with us, a guy called Chris Rogers, was displaying it. And it would go on display, and the guy who took the spare aeroplane would then commentate. And on this particular case, we went over to Switzerland. And there was a display in Switzerland, so the Reds had finished their display. I was displaying with the Reds at the time. We were walking across to go and see some of the display stuff, and we saw the Harrier start, and off it went. Now, Chris Rogers, who's the display pilot, he was a bit of a musician as well, and he had composed his own music for the display. Now, he was the guy that was flying the spare that time was a guy called Dan Stutchfield, who we went through training with. He's still in the Air Force. We've known him for a long time. And so Chris Rogers, the display pilot, said, "Dan, just play this music that I've composed as I display the Harrier." And what he would do is he would talk on the radio, so you could hear that music as well. But as we were wandering across, we were absolutely delighted to hear that Dan had taken the music that Chris had given him and substituted YMCA by the village people. Yeah. So as he came into the hover, YMCA was on.
I hope the whole crowd was doing that.
Yeah,
it was utterly
yeah.
brilliant.
But imagine the marshaler as you taxied in doing the YMCA. Well, Chris would be all over the shop.
But Chris Rogers was then transmitting. Could hear YMCA in the background, and apparently he was furious.
Where's it gone? Tell me this, why has the A380 had its engines running all day?
The engines aren't running, they just go around in the wind.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there you
go. Because of the high bypass, so you can see straight down the...
Yeah.
Oh, so I've been looking at that all day, thinking, why are they doing that?
Here he is.
Look at that. What alpha's that, then?
So again, not particularly good listening fodder, but there's an A350, a very, very slow pass down the runway, which... I guess it's showing off the range of capabilities of this aeroplane.
I think it's a win-win situation. I'd pay my airfare just to get in that, and I'm sure it's a lot more profitable for the airlines to do it. So there you go.
It'd be interesting actually to find out how much business is done, how many orders are placed during this week. I think the order was closed yesterday.
Is it not? I mean, probably Roger's the best person to talk about this, but isn't it about confirming the orders? Isn't it about announcing the orders this week?
Yeah, it's about announcing.
Announcing, and these will be orders. Oh, well, I wouldn't even call them orders. Intentions is probably a better description. And working up towards some of these intentions has probably been months, even years in the making.
Yeah.
Because it's a highlight show, this and Riyadh, this is when the big political announcements are made, whether it be through MOD here or MODs from around the world.
So it's a stage, effectively.
Yes, it is. Because everybody's here. The audience. So, and that's why
he's got his gear down.
He's got his gear down. But if he tries to land off of that approach. he'll end up where I ended up, somewhere near the A1.
It's in so many ways so much more impressive than just seeing a nimble.
Yeah, because you know a fighter is going to do exactly what it does, but you never see an airliner throwing itself around like we're seeing at the moment. So my palms have just gone sweaty where the Airbus with its gear down has pulled into a sort of 35-40 degree climb, banked about 60 degrees to the left. And it's something that if I was in that aeroplane, I'd have thrown the gin and tonic about 40 aisles backwards.
I can remember the F-22.
Probably been sick on the person next to me.
Remember the F-22 displaying here for the first time? Probably 6 years ago, maybe three shows ago, maybe even four. And being mesmerised about what the F-22 actually did.
No, but yes.
A square loop, for example.
But yeah. It's also the shape of the F-22, yeah, because it looks space age.
Yeah.
I mean, I had a full holiday romance with the F-22 when we did a detachment over to America and flew with them. When I was formating on it with the gold canopy, just the
gold
colour,
canopy is what makes
the
it,
shape,
isn't
it? It just looks like you're formating on the Starship Enterprise, mm-hmm. going back to our Enterprise talk from earlier on.
Have you ever had a tangle with one?
Yes. Yeah,
How did that work out?
In a typhoon, it was the hardest fight I've ever had. We had three fights. I won one and then lost two.
Oh, really?
So unfortunately, it was F-22 2, Typhoon 1. But
extra time penalties.
I know. I would have preferred penalties. But it was one of those things where, maybe one for another podcast, but I didn't fly as well as I could have. I think I could have won again if I'd have just not done one little thing wrong.
What did you wrong? God, it's gone.
He'd gone slow, and rather than me just flying a normal Typhoon combat sortie, which is generally staying fast and using energy, I went slow with him, and that was it. I was done.
Because he can regain his airspeed so quickly?
Well, no, thrust vectoring. He could point at me.
Nice.
That is a nice aeroplane, that Airbus 350.
Isn't it?
A350.
Roger, see you next time. We're all right,
tax money well spent.
I'll be out Belfast some stage the next month anyway.
Okay.
Cheers.
There you go.
There you go, excellent.
Yeah.
What's up next?
So the Lockheed Martin Hercules has won it for me to see a C-130J loop.
Well,
it's so scary.
Was it a J? Yeah.
I assume it was a J. I didn't get up close to it.
What's the latest version of the Botnob? The J's been around for must be like 10 years.
It has. I'm not sure of the annotation because the Americans have got so many. They're still turning them off the line in Georgia now, almost as monotonous as a maternity home.
Right.
Yeah, they are.
So I believe I can see a Eurocopter Tiger. Is that right? Was that an Augusta Westland Tiger?
I don't know. Is Eurocopter still around? It's now Airbus, isn't it?
I think it is.
It
Augusta,
is part of Airbus.
Isn't it?
Yeah, it's Airbus.
Augusta. Is it not the Italian brand, whatever they're called?
Augusta. I don't know.
Interesting.
Well, we'll see in a minute.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style. Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.